Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 331 of the Dental Marketer Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Arias. And in this episode, I am talking with Paul Baines. And Paul's a software engineer, and his spouse, his wife, is the one who started the practice. They both started the practice, but she's the dentist in the family. And he walks us through the whole process of how they did it, how they located where they're going to put their practice, how at the beginning he was looking to, I guess, acquire or transition into a practice, but it was a very competitive field, right? Or a very competitive location where he was at. So they decided to do a startup from scratch. And he talks about that. And I love the way, I mean, he's an engineer, so he has an engineer mindset. And he reversed engineered his startup process, meaning, okay, what is the worst case scenario that can happen in this process and go from there? And so listen to exactly how he did it. I mean, how he found his CPA, his architect, lawyer, all these people. And he gives us the names of the people he found and how amazing they did at their job. And so we discussed that. We also talk about the timeline of starting his practice, because he opened in, I believe it was February 2020. So it was literally a month before the pandemic. And then boom, the pandemic hit. So what happened, right? How did he survive? What was he doing in order to stay afloat and to keep their doors open? And then once, you know, Boston was able to open up a little bit more, what he transitioned to start doing for marketing and advertising then. So listen to that, because that's very, very interesting. And we also talk about the psychology. This is what I love that Paul mentions. The psychology behind doing a startup. We talk about this sometimes in some episodes, but I really enjoy and appreciate the fact that he dives a little bit deeper into this part, especially if you're starting up a practice with your spouse, your significant other, right? There's a lot that goes behind in your mind, in your psychology, that can really mess with you. So he discusses that. And maybe a lot of you guys can relate to that as well. And one thing that I love is a major factor that he contributes their growth to is software. And he talks to us specifically some of the best software that he uses for his practice right now and how it's helping them grow, become more efficient, become more comprehensive, and so forth. So guys, without further delay, here is Paul Baines. Paul, how's it going, man?
Great, man. Really looking forward to this chat today.
Awesome. If you don't mind me asking, where are you located right now?
So our dental practice is located in near Boston, Massachusetts.
Okay, awesome, awesome. So Paul, tell us a little bit about your past, your present. How'd you get to where you are today?
Yeah, I'm actually, I think, kind of one of your different types of guests. I'm not a dentist. I'm not even in the dental industry by trade. I'm actually an engineer. And my wife, Dr. Harancho Baines, she's the dentist, and she's been a dentist her entire life. And the reason I'm on talking to you today is because I fell in love with dentistry along the way, and, you know, watching her go through dental school and practicing dentistry with patients, and then obviously now to practice ownership, it's just been an incredible journey watching her develop, and I'm just really glad to have joined her along this path.
Gotcha, man. So you are the number two, or what are you in the practice then?
I'm still trying to figure out a name for myself. I just call myself office operations. I don't work in the office day to day, but I try to handle anything that I can remotely in terms of the business decisions, vendors, the business aspect of it, the HR, legal, budgeting, finance, all that kind of stuff that a lot of, you know, your listeners might be dental owners. It'd be like, if they could split up their responsibilities into one with dental side and then everything else, I get the everything else.
Yeah. Like they get the clinical and you get basically the business and everything else like that.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay, man, that's interesting. So then rewind, take us back a little bit. How was it when you guys decided to open up the practice or do your own startup? Did you guys acquire it, transition, or was it like a startup from scratch? Why did you guys decide that?
Yeah. So we started looking for practices to acquire or transition into. And in our area, the locations that we wanted to live or, you know, have our family in, it was very competitive. It's very difficult to acquire. It's all about word of mouth. It's all about luck. And we didn't have a lot of luck for a year or two. And we're like, okay, what are the other options out there? And then that's when we started looking at startup practices. And then I started learning about the startup process. And what you need to be successful is being able to get together a team of individuals that can help you do and learn everything you need to know about the startup process. So what that means to me is, like, we had to find somebody to do the real estate. You need a lawyer to do the real estate. You need somebody that is a CPA. You need somebody that is a dental equipment person, an architect. So we got this team together, this amazing team here in Boston, and they were just, the reason they're amazing is they taught us so much about what it takes to open a dental practice, because they do this all the time, right? This is their bread and butter. But for us, they held our hands through the entire process. And then at the end of it, we got an amazing practice and an amazing location. And then it's all about execution after that.
How did you find the, like, the CPA, the architect, or are they all dental specific too, or nah?
So I kind of started it backwards. I'm like, okay, if I'm a practice owner in the future, right, I try to put myself in a mindset of, like, if I'm in a practice owner, like, who's the last person that I kind of need to talk to or want to talk to ever? And that was a lawyer. That's the last person, because that means your business is in trouble, you're in trouble, or something like that. So I'm like, okay, that, I don't know. My mind just kind of works backwards.
That's sometimes. Good. I like that. Yeah.
So I looked for Google. I looked on Google, found dental lawyers, and I just talked to them and I said, hey, I'm thinking of starting a business, a dental business. Who do you work with? Who do you know? How do I know what to do? And they're like, well, since you're starting off square one, let me connect you with some people that I know. They connected me with a consultant that they work with. They connected me with, like, other folks in the industry that they knew. And it was just kind of like asking them who they work with, who else I need to know about. And then it's all about word of mouth. And, you know, if you have a good reputation, people are going to keep recommending you. So every time we talk to somebody, they've been vetted, like, hundreds of times by other customers and folks. And so there's just, like, this initial trust factor that goes into it.
Yeah. It's kind of like, you know, referral system is like, yeah, the referral system is word of mouth. It's, so from that point on, has it ever not worked out where you got someone, they told you about them, and then, you know, it was just more like, I don't get a good vibe with you, man. You're giving me wrong advice. And then I look back.
I'm going to say I had the opposite problem, where we were connected with great people and they were, like, competing against each other. So we would get connected to, like, two great equipment vendors. We could get connected to two great marketers. And then it was like, the hardest part is deciding, right? What are the factors that are important to you? What are the things that matter? And then it's like personality fit, cost, you know, all of these things come into play. And those decisions I thought were much harder than, you know, when you didn't get along. Because if you don't get along, you just, the conversation naturally slows down. Mm-hmm. It's when you get along with everybody that it becomes much harder to, you know, make decisions.
Yeah. How did you decide then?
You look for differentiators and you look at both short-term and long-term. There are certain factors where you might like the person you're working with, but then you have to look at their company, their history, their size. You know, if this person leaves, what are you going to be left with? And what I always tried to do was I tried to target, like, medium to small businesses whenever I worked with projects that were one-off. So, like, our design, our initial, like, concept, modeling, architecture, that's a one-off thing for a dental practice. So I always wanted to work with somebody small. But if this was a thing that we needed recurring service on, or if we needed some sort of, like, longer term value add, that's where, like, equipment's a great choice. Is we had to go with somebody that was reputable in the industry, had a long history of taking care of their customers. And so we went with bigger vendors there. And those were kind of the decision factors that went into each time we made a choice.
Gotcha. Okay, that's really, really good. So then throughout this, was budget ever a factor in your mind or not really?
Yeah, absolutely. So finances and budgets were very, very difficult. So my wife and I, we both have student loan debts coming out of school. We were not paying them down aggressively. We were actually saving up our money aggressively just to have cash and liquidity because we were looking to buy a home. And at that moment, home prices in Boston are also insane. They're, and I'm sure across the rest of the country as well. Mm-hmm. So we were aggressively saving for a home. And then we realized a practice would actually provide us income versus a house just, you know, putting more money into it. Finances and budget wise, we wanted to do a very particular type of deal. We wanted to get fully financed from a lender. And at that moment, for our cost and our budgets, our construction person was quoting us, like they said, no matter where you build in this area, you can expect anywhere from $350 to $450 per square foot in terms of construction for a new practice. And so then size was an important factor in how large of a practice we could get. And, you know, there's obviously like after a certain size, the cost lowers, but if you're at a certain lower size, it doesn't really matter. It's still going to be very expensive. Mm-hmm. So then our cost, our total budget was set by what the banks were willing to provide us for financing terms. And what's interesting is all the big banks, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, Citizens, all these banks pretty much all had identical terms. It was kind of funny. And for a new practice, they were all offering about the range of like $500 to $600 in Boston for about a year and a half. And then we couldn't get any better terms. We couldn't get any better financing, you know, even competing. And then we actually had to go down the SBA process, which would finance the larger project. Let me talk about our mindset in terms of the practice as well. So when we were looking at transition opportunities, we were trying to find a practice that we could grow into. And one of the things I've kind of learned listening to podcasts myself is once you have a practice, you're not going to be able to get much bigger than what you are, right? So if you're a three op practice, you're not going to be able to expand beyond three ops. If you're five ops, that's kind of your limit. So my target for the business operations that we were going to was anywhere from five ops to seven ops. So that requires a certain amount of square footage, certain amount of budget, all that kind of good stuff, right? And in this area, if I was looking for five to seven ops and in that range, they're all about $1 million plus in Boston.
Wow.
And this was, again, pre-pandemic, all this good stuff, right? So then I was like, okay, if I can get a practice with this type of setup that's new, even though I won't have any patients, even though I, you know, will have a significant marketing cost and most likely a construction cost, if I can get below that $1 million number, I'm going to be in a good spot. Like it would have been a kind of, in my mind, I was viewing it as an equivalent thing. Mm-hmm. So then we went through the SBA process, a ton of paperwork. If anybody has to go through the SBA process out there, you can appreciate how much paperwork there needs to be done. Both from your side and the bank side, and you know, just applying for these loans is a lot of work. So we went through the entire process. We handed in our application. We almost got ready to go. And then you remember when I was telling you about the big banks earlier?
Yeah.
And how they were all kind of capping their amount. Mm-hmm. Well, one of the banks decided to break ranks and they upped their limit up to 700. And if we were able to add some of our own liquidity to it, including the bank's limit, we were able to actually finance the project the traditional way over the SBA. Now, the SBA, it's a great vehicle, but it's very fee heavy. It has about a 10% fee.
Oh, wow.
Right? So whatever you take out, say you take out $7, $8, $9, you know, $1 million, you're paying 10% of that as a fee back to as a part of your loan. Traditional banks don't have that fee structure. they just have a simple, you know, your traditional interest rate.
If you don't mind me asking, what was the bank that broke the 700?
So it was actually two of them. So Citizens went up there and then TD as well.
Did you ever ask why? Like, why did they decide to? Or did you ever even bring that up that like, man, all you guys have the same terms?
They actually, what was great is they all knew each other. They all knew each other. They knew who their partners were and they all knew each other's terms. There was it was like an open secret because eventually there's guys like me, right? They'll take Bank of America's terms and give them to Wells Fargo and then they'll learn from each other what the other one is offering. So it's not like a secret of what's going on. Yeah. So what happens is each of their business divisions, so from the banking's perspective, right? They need a certain number of loans per year, per quarter, per month, right? In order to make business continue. Well, their models are structured. This is what they're telling me. This is not something I've deduced or anything like this.
Yeah.
From what I've learned is their models are based on rural areas or non-metropolitan areas, right? So for example, Bank of America may apply a model that applies across the whole country. Whereas maybe like Citizens and TD, they might only have a few big metro areas that they're involved in. So in order to keep up with the number of loans, they realized that the rates that they were offering, this 500 to 650 range, was not sufficient enough for many practices in the metro areas.
Gotcha.
So the banks that realized that were able to go to their leadership and advocate for their clients like myself that, hey, we have people who are interested who can make the numbers work at the end of the day, but they need more capital in order to start their business. And nice. And then for the leaderships that listen, you know, it worked out for us. For the clients. And then for the other ones, the metro areas may not be a priority for them because they're based on the non-metro areas.
Yeah. Gotcha. Okay. Okay. So then you decided to go with which bank?
So we went with Citizens for our loan. I kind of want to go back to like where this discussion started next. Is we started with the concept of how to like finance the project and all this stuff, right? Mm-hmm. So now we got this money from Citizens. Next is construction costs, right? That took over 50% of our budget right there. Just getting the place fitted out. What was really cool that we learned about was we got what they call a dark shell in the construction business. No concrete floors, no walls, nothing. Not even HVAC system. The electrical was like wires coming out of the ground and the plumbing was like a few like tapped off pipes in the back of the building. That's called a dark shell.
Yeah.
So we constructed our practice from that into a fully operational three operatory practice fitted for up to seven operatories.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Okay. So right now, currently it's still three plumbed or...
So we went from three and we added one operatory this year. So we're slowly growing into the space, but it'll take us a few years. But, you know, just getting that extra one in there is helping a lot alleviate, you know, some of the pressure.
Yeah, gotcha. Okay, so then rewind back. The construction that's going on right now, 50% of your loan went to that. Did you guys expect that? Was that already budgeted or were you more like, oh my gosh, this is what's happening?
So in terms of like mentality and psychology, everything that we were doing, we were kids in a playground going there for the first time. We knew nothing, absolutely nothing, right? And the thing is this is where I was advocating for your team of advisors, right? We had somebody that was looking at the real estate end of it, right? We had a lawyer, we had a real estate specialist, right? Those guys helped us gauge what was normal for the market, what to expect from a real estate deal from the lease end. And then in terms of construction cost, right, we also had a general contractor that would tell us like, you know, that this is the ballpark. Now, I was able to bring the general contractor in. He was able to look at the space and he was able to give me a much more accurate number. but he can't really tell me an accurate number without knowing what we want in the office, what the structure and the layout is. Mm-hmm. So before we even got the space, right, we had a fairly decent ballpark idea of what our space is going to be. And I had asked everybody that I worked with, please try to tell me a number or budget that's going to be on the higher end. I was like, just tell me the worst case.
Yeah.
And then if it goes below that, that's fine. Like, I can deal with that. But if you guys go over it and I have a broken budget here, here, and here, that's going to be very problematic. Right. Yeah. So fortunately, my guys did a great job. The team did a great job. Every one of them providing me fairly accurate estimates. There's very little overage. And I was really happy with that.
That's good, man. That's really, who was your real estate people? Like, what was the, you said the advisor, real estate advisor, and who else?
So I worked with Brian Choate. He's a part of the practice management group. The lawyer that we worked with was John Eskow of the Eskow Group. The CPA is Schwartz and Schwartz, Kevin Miller.
In this moment, when you guys were like feeling, we're kids in a candy shop or in a playground, just going crazy, were you guys kind of, because at the same time, I know with a lot of spouses who are like, oh, this is my practice, you know, and then the other person's like, yeah, it is your practice, but I kind of know how to run the business side. Was there ever any bumping heads on deciding things?
So I think a lot of dental spouses can attest to this, especially ones that are involved in the business, is I, in my personal opinion, will defer to my wife whenever she has a dental or business related decision, because at the end of the day, this is their responsibility, both legally and personally, and it's their baby, right? Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to help my spouse as much as possible day in, day out. Like, that is my goal. And if they want to go a particular direction, I'm going to support them. So I found that that reduces the friction that we have, and that if I don't agree with them, I'll keep an eye on the decision, you know, I'll monitor it, and then, you know, change course if we need to. But a lot of the times I found that it's much easier to just respect the dentist's choice and just go with what they're thinking and they're saying. I've been really fortunate. I've been given a lot of leeway in terms of like the practice design, structure, a lot of the non-dental areas, right? I've been able to kind of have creative freedom in setting up those systems and those processes.
That's awesome, man. That, you're a good guy, Paul. You're a good guy. That's really cool. What, what's your wife's name?
Harantul Baines.
Right. Give him a pass if you're listening, Mrs. Baines, okay? Because Paul's pretty awesome right now. Okay. That's cool, man. I respect that a lot, that you're like, you know what I mean? You give her most of the decision process. I mean, that's how it should be, right? It is her dream and everything like that. But that's still pretty cool, man. I really appreciate that. Throughout this time, when exactly did you guys open?
Yeah, so let's talk about timelines. My wife graduated school in 2016, and I graduated my program in 2017. So, you know, near the end of 2017, we just kind of sat down and like, you know, what are we doing? Are we just going to work? Are we going to have kids? Are we going to have a house? What are we? We're like, this question came up one night and we're like, okay, we'll figure it out. But, you know, what are the things that need to be in our future? And we kind of just threw out some ideas. Yeah. And I threw out the idea of like, do you want to like do dental, like business or anything? And she's like, yeah, no. Like she thought I was like joking. I'm like, I'm pretty serious. Like, I think, you know, this is something you might want to consider. And here's why I really thought it was valuable for her to have a business. Mm-hmm. The way that she told me about her patients and the stories that she would share about the work she had done, the smiles that she delivered, and like how excited patients were when they could like eat again, when they could do like normal functions. She's just so excited. And then she would come home and she's just like energized from dentistry every day. And then the thing was, is like she would occasionally over time butt heads with like management or leadership with the way that dentistry was delivered and the way that practice expected it and the way that she wanted to provide it for her patients. Mm-hmm. So I realized like this isn't a dentist who was going to be satisfied working for other folks for a long term, right? She needed to deliver her own style of dentistry through our own practice. And that's where I really kind of latched on to like practice ownership. Fast forward about 6 months, I started looking for interns for transition opportunities, started getting on these mailing lists, and I'm just having no luck. In about late 2018, I met with a person named Brian Choate of Practice Management Group. And then I met others as well, but Brian really clicked with us because he already had an opportunity with a particular, like he already had a space in mind in the area that we were looking for. So we're like, hey, let's just see where this goes. And so Brian helped us put together a business plan, a letter of intent for the landlord, and we threw that in. And then we waited. We waited 6 months before they would agree to work with us. The landlord did not want to work with us at all because why? We had no business. We had no name. We had no, like, literally nothing at this point other than, hey, we're a one-person dentist that wants to open up a mom-and-pop shop in a metro area. And they wanted, like, some corporate dentist place to go in there. And so we were really lucky. Brian fought for us and argued with them and said, hey, you need this type of business in your plaza. We went into like a retail area, and you need this business in your area because dentistry will like meet your needs. And, you know, we do have retail needs. So we waited another 6-7 months. And then finally we got a call one day and they're like, okay, you know, we're going to accept your LOI. We'll countersign it. And then we go, so this is early 2019. And then they said, hey, we're going to construct the building. Like there was nothing there. It's just a piece of land and we're going to start construction. So I think they started in late 2019 and they started construction and they went through June, July, and about, I think, October, September, they finally finished and they said, okay, you guys are ready to go in. And at this time we had enough space and time for our folks, like the architecture, the construction and everybody to be ready to get those keys and start construction. So we opened in 3 months, right on time. We finished construction per schedule, which was fantastic by our general contractor. And we opened in February 2020. And then a month later, in March, the state of Massachusetts announced the shutdown for COVID.
Yeah.
Or restrictions for COVID, I should say. And that was really interesting. First of all, my wife is now under immense pressure. She has a new practice, no patients. How do you even begin to operate in a normal environment? And then now you have a pandemic on top of it.
Yeah.
All the normal rules of advertising, we couldn't apply, right? We had spring. Typically, we would want to do some sort of local, you know, on-ground advertising efforts where we connect with the local community, hold some sort of events, anything. None of that was available to us. Mailers, flyers, nobody's interested in metro areas. They're just paperweights for our area. So then you go online and then you kind of scratch your way, you know, you grab and scratch what you can and just try to get as many patients and try to help them whenever possible. Emergency patients were kind of what we saw for several weeks. And slowly and surely, it took a few months, but we started like clawing our way out of it. That big loan that I was talking about earlier, right?
Yeah.
We ate through all of it, right? We were digging into our personal savings and then we just started barely breaking even and, you know, things started turning around. Massachusetts opened up a little bit and that helped us. And then the knock-on effect, right? Referrals were lifesaver, more online marketing finally comes into play. That kind of stuff starts steamrolling. And then by late 2020, we actually turned somewhat of a profit, which was just incredible for us.
Were you able, did you guys file for any type of loan or anything like that when the pandemic hit or the COVID hit like here?
So the PPP loan, we filed for that. And then the EIDL, EIDL loan, we filed for that. The PPP loan, we wouldn't have got it if we opened one day later. So technically we got our filing, like our permit on Friday, which was the 14th. And the PPP loan cutoff was the 15th, which is a Saturday. So if we missed that one day and the inspector had decided to like wait until the weekend and give it to us on Monday, we would have never got the PPP.
Man.
So yeah. So the next challenging part was how to apply for the PPP, right? Because we only had a month and a half of payroll, barely, by the time that the application came to us and we could actually apply through our bank. And so, you know, our CPA kind of came up with like, you know, here's how much you get. And I think we got around 10, 15, if I remember correctly. And that was it. And then that definitely helped, right? And then the EIDL loan, we didn't qualify for that properly either. But, you know, you write, we wrote a statement explaining our situation, and then we got the bare minimum that we qualified for. So that was great. But those little bits there were enough to like push us past a few months, you know, enough to alleviate some of the pressure.
Yeah. And this whole time, were you guys still seeing like emergencies or anything like that? Did you have your staff still or nah?
So our staff was interesting, and I don't think we would have made it through with any other staff. Our staff was really, really flexible with us. And what that meant is, if we had an emergency call on a Tuesday afternoon, we would ask our staff. Actually, they pretty much were right along with us. We would just come in for that Tuesday, help that patient out, and then call it a day. And so some days we were seeing two patients, three patients that were scheduled. And then other days we would just have to close up and, you know, wait it out until we got an emergency call. So if we didn't have that sort of flexibility with our staff members, who were completely very, very understanding that both that this was a new business and that, you know, everything going on, we probably wouldn't have made it.
How were new patients finding you? Or what were you guys doing for advertising during the pandemic then? Because if you were still getting new patients in.
Okay, so this goes back to our location. And I think our location really helped us. We're in a prime, like we're retail location, and we're next to a grocery store. So there's a lot of visibility, right? Grocery stores never shut down during the pandemic. They were continuing to operate. And then we also had vehicle traffic for the grocery store. So people knew that we existed. The big problem is that they didn't know that we were open. So they thought we had shut down. So we would have people come in and they're like, we thought you were closed. So then we had to put some big like posters outside, like, we're open, like emergencies only, you know, we're taking a patient if you need help.
Gotcha. So that helped out a ton then, right? Like throughout the whole process. I mean, to make it like viable, right? Because like today, do you still get a lot of new patients from like the grocery store?
So I would say we have a mix of patients, right? The grocery store is always going to be a help, right? It's always going to be there. It's just kind of a community thing. But eventually you will, and then you need to perform great dentistry and you need to provide great experiences, right? And I think that's where a lot of our internal referrals come from. And then, you know, online marketing is also a big thing. Google, Facebook, Instagram, being active on those, showing your patients that, you know, we're live and we're doing well. And, you know, if you come here, we're not going to go out of business next year. I think that was like a big positive thing that we were able to do that was able to instill patient confidence.
Yeah, that's nice, man. I really, really like that. So then your team, you still have every single staff member that stuck with you throughout COVID?
Yeah, we haven't lost any staff. We've been slowly adding to our staff. One of the big challenges I think that's happening across the industry is adding, you know, obviously it's hit the restaurant industry, but I think it's heading dental as well. Is recruiting team members is really challenging right now. And those are some of the challenges we're facing, is the market has accelerated, right? The hourly rates, everything, they've gone up. And then the unfortunate side is insurance companies don't reimburse us anymore, right? They don't, the negotiation power of a small practice is almost nil against major insurance companies, especially a new one. So then you have increasing cost and lowering, you know, pretty much stable revenues. And it's like, it's a big balancing act.
Yeah, definitely, man. Do you guys, right now, would you say you're fee-for-service, PPO, or a little bit of both, or?
We are mostly PPO, and we do have the occasional fee for service. I'd say it's probably anywhere from an 80-20 mix.
Gotcha. Okay, that's pretty good. And then, so I want to rewind a little bit. How did you find your team? How did you hire them? Did you just go on Indeed.com or?
So because one of the things we wanted to do was stay in the area that we already lived in, my wife was able to reach out to some of her former like coworkers that she had great experiences with and let them know that, hey, in a couple of years, I might be opening a dental practice. They're like, oh, we're super excited for you. If it ever happens, let us know. And so when the date finally came, we let them know and asked them to join. And that's kind of how we got our first employees. And I think, you know, that initial like trust and, you know, belief in the system and their practice was already there. And then since then, we've gone to recruiting services that, you know, we'll pay a fee and then they'll try to recruit folks for us. It's not something that I can do within my abilities or my timelines.
Gotcha. Yeah, because you're right now, Paul, are you still working full-time as an engineer?
Yeah, I indicated earlier, I'm actually not in the business full-time. I'm a software engineer by trade, and that's kind of what I do for my full-time work.
Man, do you plan to eventually kind of transition fully into the practice or nah?
I don't think it's in my personality set to be in the full-time practice. I think there's some interesting challenges and problems that dentists face, and I like knowing about them and like solving them. But for my interest and abilities, I need some software to write or design a system or build something new. It's kind of my area of interest.
Yeah, I get you, man. I like how you guys brought up the fact that, man, y'all were just on the couch one day and you're like, hey, so what are we doing with our, are we going to open up a practice or anything like that? And then you guys decided to do this, you know what I mean? To make it happen. And it's been a journey, right?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of it is luck, man. I really have to like emphasize that. Like there's probably other people, you know, that were in the similar shoes as us that wanted to open a practice, wanted to, you know, do a certain type of dentistry. And we were just so fortunate to meet the people that we met, to get the opportunities that we did, and to even practice. I think it's such a game of luck. Like every little decision, you don't realize it then, but looking back, it's amazing how those things arise and then how your like decision factors play into it. So I do want to emphasize another thing. This is kind of be a little off topic, but I kind of want to talk about like the psychology and like the emotions that go into that timeline that I was talking about earlier.
Yeah.
So my background is engineering, right? So when we were first opening the business, I'm very like connection oriented. Like, okay, if we do this, then we do this, then we do this, right? Mm-hmm. So I didn't see the dentistry as an emotional thing. Just personally, right? Like that's just my pattern of thinking. Whereas my wife, she was much more connected to how does this impact us? What are the things that are going to connect all this together, right? So it's easy to tell a story and say that it's easy, right? Or that it was just, here's how things worked out. When you're waiting, like earlier in our story, when we were waiting for that letter of interest, come back from the landlord, that was like really, really painful because you can't go do anything else. You're waiting for somebody else to make a decision. And every week or every other week when you get an update, they're not making it. And you're like, what can we do better? What can we do to improve our situation? And there's nothing you can do. And I come from an engineering world where this is actually can be fairly common, right? The mantra is called hurry up and wait. And so for us to go through this together, it was great to see it both sides because I think in dentistry, when your patients come to you, they want instant results. They want the pain to go away instantly. And you're expected to deliver that. And what I think the dentist, they also feel pressure to like just get things done quickly and not wait around, right? There's same day dentistry that's becoming more common. You know, everything is becoming quicker and quicker. But on the business side of it, it's the complete opposite, right? It's a game of patience, strategy, finances, analysis, all this stuff. And that takes time. So it was an awesome experience working together through all those challenges, but completely different mindsets approaching the same problems.
Wow. So with that, was there any times where you guys were like, maybe we shouldn't do this?
Oh, absolutely. I remember one day we got the letter of intent from the landlord, and then it was actually the final lease. This is the signed, reviewed 6 months of work from our lawyer, the real estate. Everybody had put a ton of work into this. And this is the signature moment, right? Mm-hmm. This is the thing that says you're going to be a business and you need to go get financing. You need to go get your construction folks together. Everything got to go do after this. Like, it's the starting point. So I sit down with my wife, it's all printed out, and I say, hey, I'm going to give you a few days, but this is it. Like, there is no turning back after this point. And I kind of gave her like the choice of like, this isn't something that I can do all the time for you. I can't get this. I can't give you other opportunities like this in the next year or the next like few months, just because of how long it took to get this opportunity in front of you. Mm-hmm. And so we were discussing like, do we want to do this now? Right. Obviously we didn't know a pandemic was happening. We didn't know there was going to be anything. Like there was a, like a minor financial crash in 2020 as well. None of that stuff was predictable. But I said, if you think you're going to be successful, like, or you want to do this ever in your life, there's never a better moment than now. And she signed, and she was like, but she had her doubts, right? She was like, is this what I really want to do? And like all this stuff. But I think what's really great is my wife also had her own support network of other dentists that were business folks as well. And they were all pumping her up and encouraging her and telling her not to worry. And I think that really helped kind of give her a different perspective, not just of me and the work I put in, but also of like other folks that had been in her shoes to encourage her.
Yeah, man, that's because I think if you wait for too long, right? Like presented with an opportunity and then like give it some time to think about it, I could come up with reasons not to do it. You know, I can be like, hey, I'm living pretty nice right now. It's okay. We don't have to do it. But when you have the support system and then you know, you kind of have a little bit more pressure. You're like, oh, this is what it's always going to be in the back of your mind, you know?
It's kind of like your philosophy on life. Do you want to live life with any regrets, right? I think everybody should try their best efforts right away. And if they're thinking of something, then go out and do it. Now, looking back, I think it's a great decision, but there's multiple times we could have failed, right? That's where the luck comes in. But I'm just glad we gave it a try and we were able to, that I'm even here talking to you. I'm really fortunate and I'm really feel lucky about it.
Yeah, man, that's awesome. So then one of the last questions I want to ask you, now that you're open and up and running and everything like that, what's been some of the best companies you've worked with?
So the one thing that I haven't really talked about that actually became a major, major factor to what I would consider our growth and success has been software. My background is software and technology. So one of the things I really looked for is, let me explain a little bit more about my background.
Yeah.
I'm in software. It's not considered a bad thing to call yourself lazy. Now, what that means is a lazy developer, lazy software engineer is somebody who will try to do their work the most efficient way possible, because they don't want to do it manually. So I'll give you an example. Like if you have to like format a paper, right? You don't want to go and put in all the spaces and punctuations and stuff like that. So a software developer will spend like 3 weeks making a software tool that will put in the right spaces and punctuations every time, right? Mm-hmm. Then he never has to do that again. And that's what it means to be a lazy developer. So you want to be a lazy developer that uses tools to do their job. So you spend actually less time doing your job. Okay, makes sense, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's what I did for the dental practice. I went and found the best software tools that I could find in the market at the time. And that starts with the practice management system. And what I wanted in the practice management system was something that was responsive, modern, and comprehensive, I didn't want to go and buy a tool or buy a practice management system that had pieces and parts where I'd have to plug them in and add them and configure them and make sure that they worked all the time. And the tool that I found with my research and my understanding of the market was CareStack. And I found CareStack to be a very compelling argument for a lot of efficiencies, right? So one of the things I focus on is I'm a patient to this business or patient to this dental office. And I really don't, like me personally, I do not like filling out forms, right? Mm-hmm. Please just don't give me any paper. I don't want to sit in your waiting room at all. Like, I just want to go back. So that's what we did for our patients, right? And CareStack helped us do that. So CareStack's able to send out a link to the patients. They're able to log in and then ta-da, right? Like, they have a link to their health history, their dental history, the dentist. Once the patient enters that information, it gets entered into the software. So there's no manual process or anything there. And then the staff, as soon as the customer or the patient clicks submit, it's done, right? It's in our software. They're able to see it instantly and they're able to review the patient's whole medical dental history. And it's all customizable. So if you want more questions, less questions, whatever you want to do, it's all there. Now, when a patient wants to come in, they can go straight back to the chair. They don't need to wait. Obviously, I'm skipping over some details of insurance and, you know, other types of logistics, but the effect is the patient has a seamless process just getting into the door. That was my first major tool that I wanted to roll out. Then the next tool, right, I looked at was clinical. Now, this is where I have zero experience, right? I have none. And even today, I have very little experience. And so this is where I depended on my wife. I'm like, how fast can she learn? How interested is she learning? And not only was she able to learn quickly, her staff was able to learn quickly. And then we bring in specialists into our practice. They were able to learn quickly. So at that time, I didn't know, but this is a huge cost reduction when other staff, your own staff, and like your own users are able to learn quickly the clinical side, how to enter their code, dental codes and stuff like that. So then finally, patient leaves, right? They've had their fees calculated, insurance, whatever it is, right? Mm-hmm. The back end of it is claims processing, paperwork, sending out claims, and then collecting payments, obviously, as well. All of this stuff you get with CareStack, right? Which I found to be above and beyond what I thought was available on the market, and especially how like fast and snappy their software is. Okay, finally, you get to the end and it's fairly simple to do all the backend work because it's all integrated. So, you know, in a few months when the patient EOB comes, you can enter that into their records and then you can get a statement for the patient if there's any remaining amounts and balances and stuff like that. But let's say you want to send a message to a patient or an email to the patient, right? Or mass emails available in the software. Typically, what I found is other types of tools, you had to either like buy a third-party tool to like connect into it, or it just wasn't available. So all these things together made CareStack, from start to finish, a very comprehensive tool that, to me, reduced a lot of inefficiencies that I would have gotten with other tools.
And a lot of like, oh, I got to do more research to find that other tool, right? And then another bill and then another research. You know what I mean? Like it would have been a lot more in the startup phase.
Right. Well, and like I said, you know, back to the software story, right? It's not just about getting whatever it is, right? You want a tool that works efficiently, that does exactly what it's supposed to. And I think with CareStack, not only does it promise, you know, it delivers what it promises, which is great, but it works, right? It's kind of like the Apple of software in my eyes, which is, you know, it's very polished. With such a comprehensive tool, I haven't had to actually buy a lot of other or get a lot of other services, right? So the only other software service that I really have is just an email account and then a phone account. That's it. So with those few services, I've covered about 90% of my needs.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Man, that's awesome. That's so awesome. And the cool thing is, like, right now, CareStack is with us. They're our partners. They sponsor the podcast. So anybody listening can definitely get a free trial. Check them out. Check out CareStack. But that's awesome, Paul, man. That's awesome that you're growing. It's continuing to, you're seeing like progress throughout this whole time, right? Even though, and I like how you, I mean, you're humble, man. You're humble to the point where you're like, a lot of it's luck, but a lot of it is like research. You know what I mean? You did it from the beginning. You reverse engineered and kind of figured your way into this, right? Without knowing much about dentistry. But now you're like, you know all about it. So it's pretty awesome, man. That's cool. And then really quick, Paul, what sets CareStack apart from other software vendors?
So I looked at quite a few software companies out there, right? CareStack's not the only one I did a research on, and it's not the only. So one thing I wanted was cloud-based. I think what sets CareStack apart is their user support and the way that they set up their service contract. So every week or in every month, I have coaching calls and conference calls with CareStack, analyzing our practice to make sure that we are utilizing the software most efficiently. So first of all, they have great support. But then in addition to that, what I love about CareStack is they have a chat window. You can message them and they will respond instantly. Their chat team can video share your screens with you. They can send you emails. Any way you want to communicate with them, they're available. But what's amazing about their team is they're all dental professionals. They're former hygienists, dental assistants, office managers. So then what that means is when you ask them a question like, hey, I'm trying to enter this crown, you don't need to explain them what a crown is or what a part of a tooth it is that you're trying to do. They know exactly what it is and they get right to the problem. I don't think I've spent more than 5 minutes with their chat trying to solve a problem. They're that efficient.
Man, that's awesome. That's super, super awesome. So if any of you guys want to try out CareStack, you can definitely go in the show notes below. Check them out for free. See what they got for you guys. And everybody here gets an exclusive deal. But Paul, one thing I wanted to ask you really quick before we say goodbye is, anybody in the startup phase right now, maybe they've opened or they're about to be open, or they're like, oh my gosh, I opened exactly when Paul opened and I'm not seeing those type of results. What kind of advice would you want to give them?
The same advice that my team gave me, that success is an overnight thing. It takes years. And so I'm a person that works on like rules of thumb. And what that means is if somebody is a professional or it is like they know certain best practices about their industry, right? So I went to my CPA, I went to my dental equipment folks, I went to my other business folks that I work with, and I'm like, be real with me. How long does it take for a dental business to, you know, reach its peak or be successful? They all said anywhere from 3 to 5 years. And so what that means is we're just starting out, right? Mm-hmm. We still have a long road ahead of us. We don't know what success means. We might have just hit a bit blimp because of COVID, right? Nobody knows. So be patient. Your patients will come to you when you open your office. And when you're open and you're operating, do the best that you can. And I know every dentist is trying, but I think the patience part is something that we forget all the time.
Yeah, definitely, man. I appreciate that. Thank you so much, Paul, for being with us. It's truly been a pleasure. If anybody has any questions or concerns or anything like that, where can they find you?
My email and phone number, I guess I'll give you that. You can add that in the show notes.
Awesome. Awesome. All righty, man. I truly, truly appreciate that. And guys, thank you so much for tuning in. And Paul, thank you so much for being with us. It was a pleasure and we'll hear from you soon.
Thank you.
Paul, thank you so much, man, for being on this episode. We truly appreciate it. And guys, thank you so much for tuning in. If you are interested in CareStack, remember, they are officially our sponsors now. So what you can do is go in the show notes below and check them out for free. They're giving you a free 10-day trial. You can check them out, see if you like them, see if they fit you. And if you decide to go with them, you do get an exclusive deal with CareStack. So go in the show notes below, check out the deal that you get. And if you want, give them a call, schedule a demo. And with that, you guys can determine for yourself if it's a fit for you, which I'm pretty sure it's going to be, because as you heard Paul talk about it, it's pretty awesome. They do almost everything, if not everything, for you. And they are fantastic, fantastic, very comprehensive. They are well equipped and they have a great, great team behind them. And they're cloud-based too. So guys, definitely check them out. Go in the show notes below. You heard Paul talk about CareStack. They're amazing. And Paul's a software engineer, so I'm pretty sure he knows what he's talking about. So go in the show notes below and check them out. And guys, thank you so much for tuning in. If you want to continue the conversation with this episode or any other episode that you've heard in the past, join the Facebook group, The Dental Marketer Society. And thank you so much for tuning in, and I will talk to you in the next episode.